Welcome to Foothold America's U.S. Expansion Mini-Pod, Three Questions, One Voice. I'm your host, Joanne Farquharson, President and CEO of Foothold America. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome a good friend and mentor, Robert Johnson. Rob has founded, co-founded, or led six companies in the past decade and a half, all of which are transatlantic and running strong. Rob is a natural networker and has developed an exceptional ecosystem of influential life science contacts. If you're in biotech or a founder wanting to expand to the U.S., I encourage you to connect with him. For the sake of transparency, I'll share that Rob is the co-founder of Foothold America. He hired me in 2018 and has trusted me as the CEO for the past 5 years. It's been a wonderful journey. All righty, let's get started with our three questions, hearing one voice, Mr. Robert Johnson.
How would you describe the moment you first decided to expand your business to the U.S., say the first time, and can you recall some of the feelings and concerns?
Sure. So we had just set up Alacrita, Anthony and I. We'd worked, been working together for about 10 years. And there was, we were in the middle of the credit crunch. So it was hard going, setting up a new business in the middle of the credit crunch.
So this is what, 2009?
So yeah, we set up Alacrita 2009 in London.
Okay.
And then I'd always had this seed planted in my mind from a guy called Peter Smith, who was a mentor and co-founder of Onivax with Anthony. And he once said to me, Rob, if you really want to get ahead in biotech, you need to find a way to get to the US. So that was in early 2000s, he told me that. So it had always been in my mind, I do want to get ahead in biotech. And during the credit crunch in England and the UK, there were very few new companies being funded. It was like a nuclear winter. But in Boston, it felt like every 3 to 4 weeks, there was another announcement of a Series A of $30 million, which at the time was significant, especially given the nuclear winter. And I said to Anthony, look, I really think we as an advisory firm need to be where the money is. And I think we should set up an office in Boston. And I want to do that.
Excellent.
And fairly soon after that, he said to me, okay, have you looked at how much medical insurance costs?
No way, really? So health insurance right away. Said, it's huge.
Yeah. And I said, hadn't even crossed my mind.
Right. That's a big piece of it. So it sounds like, a mentor first recommended this. It had germinated for a while. But when you actually decided, like, yes, we're ready to do this, what do you remember what your feelings were about, you know, is it all excitement? What trepidation, if any, did you have?
Well, another key stakeholder was my wife, and I was wondering what she would think about the idea. And I will never forget, I said to her one evening, what do you think about moving to Boston? And she looked at me and she said, yeah, definitely. So I thought, okay, we're on.
Oh, that's helpful.
And then, she was very supportive. And then the process began of working out how do we do this. And it took us sort of 9 months to really, you know, sort of moments like building the plane while we're flying it, because we're also delivering consulting services to our clients.
Right.
So I remember, it was just feeling of exhilaration and adventure.
Okay. And I think there is an airport story where the whole family is stuck in an airport. Well, let's not go there, but you had your fair share of that balance between managing your life, managing your business. And at the time you were moving, how many kids to the U.S.?
At the time we had 3 children and the youngest was 9 months old.
Very brave.
The oldest was at primary school. She was, I think, in reception or, probably reception at primary school, elementary school for Americans. And my wife and I sat her down on her bed one evening and said, we've got some news for you. We're going to move to America. Thinking she's going to be super excited by this. And she burst into tears. And
oh, my God.
Devastated.
Uh-oh, like, one of the stakeholders isn't on board.
Yes. And then I said to her, well, you know that America, that's where Disney World is. And she looked at me and she said, we can go to Disney World? And I said, we could go to Disney World. And then from then on, she was on board and happy with it.
Oh, so, brilliant. Brilliant.
America.
Nice, nice. So since then, so you lived in Boston for a long time. You co-founded a company there. You're back in the UK now. You've been a part of a couple of companies that have expanded to the US. So since that first big move for you and your family, how do you feel about US expansion now?
Well, it's still, we made mistakes, no question about it, in the early days with Alacrita. No question. I remember Anton and I, we were talking, we're trying to work out, should we have an Inc. or should we have an LLC? Which legal entity would be best? Which we needed this for our visa, my visa. And we were introduced to an accountant in New York City, and she was very well qualified. She listened to our story. She gave us some initial thoughts. And then we were introduced to another accountant in Boston. And we thought, actually, we'd probably rather go with the person in Boston. And we told the person in New York we weren't going to work with her. And we hadn't signed an engagement letter, but we received a bill, which was surprising. And even the various accountants that we ended up working through, going from one to the other, to try and find someone who could really offer us genuine transatlantic advice, it was very hard to get a definitive, yes, you should definitely do this, because there are so many subtleties and yeah, state variances. So there are many, many decisions you have to make. These are decisions you have to make, which are, you're probably going to live for the long term. It's somewhat difficult to sort of change some of these decisions. And at my last company, we decided we needed to hire someone in Boston, very, very talented person who would be a tremendous, tremendous value add for the business. And a person responsible for deciding, you know, how should we do this? She said, oh, I've done this before. We will we'll just set up a legal entity and it'll be fine. We bring on the employee. Turns out she wasn't an employee for some time because we couldn't employ her. And then she was a contractor initially, and then she eventually became an employee, and then she spent months without medical insurance. I was like, I thought you said you'd done this before. And things had changed, and so there are many missteps for the people who've done it before,
right? And it's true. I mean, American founders, just, you know, not going transatlantic, trying to figure it out as someone who knows the lingo there, it's complicated, and it also sometimes it's not obvious in what order you should do things. So, but you absolutely hit it on the head that the health insurance is a big piece of it. So that brings me to question two, which is, as I mentioned in the intro, you are the co-founder and now board chair of Foothold America. And the concept of Foothold America, I guess, evolved because of those missteps that you had, and you thought, you know, this has got to be easier. So my question to you is, as someone who went to the U.S. as a life science consultant, then seeing a need for something dramatically different, why did you think that it was important to act upon that need, even though it was, I imagine, not at all what you expected you'd be doing in the States?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we ended up hiring an office in the same building as the British consulate in Boston. And they'd been sort of somewhat helpful in helping us come over and set up our firm in Boston. So I knew them. And one of them said to me, the life science specialist, a guy called John McLennan, said to me, Rob, would you mind meeting this company? They're in Manchester. They're spinning out of an AstraZeneca research department. They would like a business development person on the East Coast in Boston. And they're trying to work out how to do it. And I said, yes, of course, very happy to help. And it was through that discussion that they were sort of trying to navigate through the same hurdles that we'd navigated. And I said, look, you know what? Thinking about it, we've just done all this. We've set up all the infrastructure. Doesn't it make sense for you to leverage what we've set up? So I circled back to the consulate and they said, what do you think about this idea? And they said, whoa, if you do that, then we've got a whole lot of other companies we could introduce you to. So I thought, this is clearly an unmet need. As a business advisor at the time, you know, you've got to listen to the market. That's what we always tell our clients. And so it felt that there was a just clear and present unmet need. The British consulate told me that they had relationships with other firms that helped UK businesses have boots on the ground in China and other parts of the world, but they didn't have anybody in the US. So I thought, here's an amazing opportunity. Let's help some life science companies get boots on the ground in America.
Nice. And so looking back at that, I sometimes when I'm talking about the story of Foothold America, and you are the story of Foothold America, that you accidentally set up an employer of record business. So businesses in the UK were able to have boots on the ground, perhaps without even setting up a U.S. entity through your U.S. entity. So it's fantastic. And a few years later, I became a part of the story, and it's been a wonderful adventure. So I personally am very thankful that you decided to respond to an unmet need instead of saying, hey, we're life science consultants and that's what we do. So thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure some of the founders listening have very definitive plans about what the US will be and how they envision things. And it could be that there's a big pivot. So that's a good information for folks.
Yeah, especially in an early stage company, you've got to be, able to pivot and explore different areas and work out where you're getting traction. And this happened to be an opportunity, and we were at the time opportunistic.
Excellent. Thank you. So I'm going to go to question number 3. And this is an area where I think you are particularly skilled to share your expertise with founders. So a part of the work you've done at various companies has been to raise funds. And perhaps even in the consulting business, you were helping other founders raise funds. So can you give us a little bit of information about that journey? So the first time you did it, what you've learned since then, and then also when you've dealt with VCs that are based in different countries, have you noticed any differences in their mindset, what you need to do to communicate to VCs in various countries?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and I think it's changing. If I just provide a bit of context, so Anthony and I were working at Onivax together, a biotech company for 10 years, and biotech is capital intensive. So we were always meeting with investors, mainly in Europe and in the UK. At Alacrata, the consulting firm, we were supporting a lot of biotech companies with strategic positioning and strategy to enable them to be competitive in the capital markets. And then at Boston, as you say, we raised venture capital money for a gene therapy company, and then came back here and raised further capital. So I think the biggest difference between the US and the UK is the scale of the capital availability. And in the US, there are more funds and they're generally bigger. That adds an interesting dynamic because they are, I think there are so many elements. I remember when we were raising money for Affinia, the gene therapy company, capital markets were quite, they were open. And we were told by a top tier venture capital fund, we will send you a term sheet, let us know when you're ready, and it'll be plain vanilla NVCA terms. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. I wonder if they actually will be, because our experience in the UK was actually when capital markets were very tight, investors were just squeezing and squeezing and squeezing the founders. And it was unpleasant and frankly disincentivizing. Whereas the US investors were like, you know, this is a long-term relationship. We're going to play it with a straight bat, to use a British phrase. And true to their word, they sent us a very simple term sheet, and it was exactly NVCA standard. And they were incredibly easy to deal with. Mm. It was really very straightforward. There's a difference in valuations. US valuations still are higher, pre-money valuations, generally higher in the US compared to the UK and Europe. And I think there are loads of things in common, right? I mean, every venture capitalist is looking for, you know, how do I get a return on this investment? I think the US, maybe because it's the scale, the US investors may be prepared to take on a bit more risk. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you an interesting anecdote. The first week I was in Boston, I thought, I've really got to start networking and building relationships. I find myself at a CEO conference presenting to investors. And they had a panel of small companies presenting to investors, mid-cap companies, and then larger cap companies. Didn't hear the phrase from any of them once, the phrase exit, or exit strategy. Did not hear that phrase at all. The message from those US investors to those US investors from those CEOs was, we're building a company, and we're going to build a company. And we'll fully own it. Whereas in Europe and the UK, you're sort of trained to say, you've got to tell investors what your exit strategy is. And that is not the same in the US.
Interesting. So your sense, if I'm understanding, is that the US VCs want to hold on for longer. Is that, would you say that's the outcome, and that it's too early to talk about exits, or what?
I think it's probably the founder mindset. Founders want to build the next, whatever, Google, and believe that if it works out, there will be capital to take them to the next level, whether that be IPO markets or another private round. And the VCs are on board with this. They're on board with that.
Okay.
So I think UK sentiment is changing, and I've seen, you know, we're always talking to investors now, and I can see UK investors have an increasingly US mindset, but still not quite the same as in the US.
Great. So this is a mini pod, so we won't go on too much, but I do want to ask a follow-up question in terms of working with VCs, because all over the place you'll see pitch sessions where founders who are eventually going to want funding are a part of programs to learn how to put together a pitch deck, learn how to pitch. So over the years, when you've done these kinds of things, what would you recommend that founders consider, regardless of the location? Now, you mentioned the exit strategy difference and the size difference, but in terms of a founder who's going for funding for the first time, what would you recommend that they keep in mind when they're putting together their pitch and their pitch deck?
That's a great question. That's a whole podcast in itself. I would suggest you've got to be able to articulate the unmet need. What is the problem you're actually solving, and is it a problem? You've got to be able to articulate your solution to the problem and why. The reasons to believe that your solution really is got a good chance of solving that need. And it's very helpful to be able to, I think also you need credibility. You need to build layers of credibility. Now, whether that's the the origin of your science, it's a prestigious scientific institution, or it's your board of directors who are particularly great, or whatever it is, you need to start building layers of credibility. And it's always very helpful to wrap it up in a story. So people respond to storytelling. So try and tell the story, whether it's a story of a patient who, you know, suffering from a terrible disease and you've got a solution to that disease, whatever it is, or it's a story of the scientific founder. But to tell a story, I think, is an effective way. And there's loads of information online these days, but storytelling is a very effective way of gaining attention. And of course, you've got to demonstrate differentiation.
Okay, that's not a tall order. So unmet need, your solution, credibility, storytelling, and differentiation. Got it.
There we go.
Each season, we have a bonus question. It's because I can't help but ask questions. So here's our season's bonus question. What's one cultural difference you experienced either with U.S. employees and U.S. networking that caught you off guard, sort of surprised you? And then what did you do to manage that as someone who's grew up, spent your life in England?
The point that comes to mind, when you ask me that, is sort of community and supporting each other. On the personal side, I now know what David Cameron was talking about by the big society. And in our little community where we live just outside Boston, the community, I mean, people really did spend significant amounts of their time helping the community. And it was a wonderful thing. I was like, oh, wow, this is what David Cameron was talking about. It was a wonderful experience. But that mindset also translates into the work environment. And I remember, again, week one, I'd met someone, an executive in Boston running a biotech company. And a few days later, I bumped into them in Kendall Square. I said, oh, hi, Michelle. Nice to see you. She goes, oh, how's it going? Is there anybody I can introduce you to? I've been thinking about our meeting. Let me connect you with XYZ. And sure enough, she introduced me to some people. And I'm not sure if that sort of happens in the UK so much. People are a little bit more guarded with their relationships and contacts. And especially in an industry like biotech, where it's all about collaboration and relationships, I just think it goes a long way to be, you know, we're all in it together to cure some terrible diseases. And that's the objective. It's impossible to develop a drug by yourself. It's a team effort. And I find Americans much more ready to connect you with other people who might be able to help in this challenging endeavor of developing a new drug.
That's a wonderful observation. And I spend a lot of my time talking with people, and even if we can't help them with our services, developing the ecosystem is huge. So who you can help connect them to. And I do find that sometimes when I'm having these conversations, people feel quite surprised, like, why are you doing this for me? And it's sort of what goes around comes around. And I think also you probably attracted that to you yourself, because you are very community oriented, raising funds for associations while running the London Marathon, for example, and networking. So yeah, introducing people, and it's I love that. That's how things work in the U.S. and the U.K. and Europe as well. But it's maybe a bit more straightforward in the U.S. So, hey, I want to introduce you. We all want to do business together. You know, beating around the bush. But that's incredible. All of this is great advice. And it's not necessarily the things you'll see when you Google. So sometimes there's just more just information. And yours is very, what you've shared today is very personal. And I think going to be very helpful to founders who are expanding. So thank you very much.
I hope so. And I hope for any founder out there who's thinking about testing out America, It is an unbelievable marketplace to do business. It's a massive market opportunity. People are great, and it changed my life for the better. So go for it.
Thank you for joining us for this important episode featuring Rob Johnson, CEO of Kesmalea Therapeutics. And thank you, Rob, for sharing your expertise driving transatlantic growth in the life science industry. If you enjoyed today's conversation, subscribe to US Expansion Minipod on your favorite platform. Published on the first and third Wednesdays of every month, you'll find engaging US expansion discussions with industry leaders and innovators. Don't forget to share this episode with your network. In the comments, you can find a link to Rob Johnson's LinkedIn profile for more information about him and his work. This has been Joanne Farquharson, President and CEO of Foothold America, and that wraps up our three questions for today. Until next time, keep expanding your horizons.